Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Listening to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Welcome to Why We Cook, episode 59. And I'm feeling a little bitter. Not in a grouchy, negative, bad way, although that often tends to be my default setting. But more in a bittersweet way. You know, like a carrot that stayed in the ground for too long and lost its sweetness. The end of summer is here as of today. Is today the 21st? I think as of today. And wow, you can really feel it. What a difference from late spring, when the days would, you know, last until 9:30 at night, and I would get out of here and it was light for hours. And now when I finish doing this show live, it's starting to get dark out already. And soon enough, it'll be fully dark when I leave my day job at 5 o'clock to come here. A few months ago, I would do the show, then eat some pizza here at Roberta's, and still have an hour left of daylight in which I could walk home. I could walk the 4 miles home from here, and it would still be daylight, but not so much now. That walk home takes me through some kind of edgy neighborhoods, and I don't really like to do it in the dark. Particularly some of those streets near the Brooklyn Navy Yard, they can get pretty desolate after work, after working hours. So I take the subway instead. And I'll just wait until next May for the days to get long again. But it's okay. It's not a bad bitterness. It's okay. It's good. It's fall, and I like fall a lot. And I even kind of like winter sometimes. It just seems that every year it kind of takes me by surprise how quickly the long summer days shorten into long winter nights. It seems to happen much more gradually in the spring and then very suddenly in the fall. It just always kind of startles me, I guess. And I may actually have a chance to go to Iceland this Christmas time. And those guys get no daylight at all in the winter. It's dark all the time. So that should give me some perspective on this and, you know, make it better because other people have it worse. That's how you have to think about things. And one of the things that I like about this season, other than the weather cooling off, which makes me very happy and not bitter at all, is that, you know, we start the shift from eating like the sweet little tender lettuce of spring and summer to the more mature, sturdy, sometimes bitter and pungent grown-up greens of fall. And I love those guys. I love the bitter and the pungent. I love those autumn greens. I mean, don't get me wrong. They may be bitter and pungent, but they're great. I love the aggressive flavor of the winter greens, and the way that you can balance them out by cooking them with all the sweetness that we get now from all the autumn and winter squashes and root vegetables. And it's like the above ground plants feel the winter coming, and they get all like tough and brave in the face of darkness and cold, and you know, they sort of sturdy themselves up. And the roots and the hard squashes are all kind of snug underground or in their thick, hard shells, just like kind of pumping out the sugar that they wisely stored up all summer. And you put them together and you get these really nice contrasts, those kind of really intensely green, bitter green flavors, and then those really nice, sweet, mellow winter squashes. So it's good. I like this time of year. I like the food. And last Friday was Yom Kippur. Although when I was young, I thought it was Yom Kippur because my family used to say Yom Kippur. And so I thought they were talking about a little tiny smoked fish, like a Yom Kippur. Took a few years for me to figure that one out. That's like that Christmas song where you sing, "In the meadow, we can build a snowman and pretend that he is Parson Brown." I always thought Parson Brown was a color. I didn't know what a parson was. But then I thought that Yom Kippur was about a fish. So somebody wasn't really telling me what I needed to know. Anyway, so last Friday was this, you know, Jewish holiday, and I had the day off from my regular teaching job. And since I'm not an observant Jew and I was not about to fast, it gave me a day and a chance to work somewhere else. And so that was the day that I went up to, one of the days last week that I went up to Greenwich, Connecticut to teach a new private client of mine up there. A lady who I cannot name there has hired me to teach her and a few of her friends some cooking skills. And so off I went to her 30,000 square foot house. Can you even call it a house if it's 30,000 square feet? 30,000 square foot house. I'm not kidding. Now, this is nothing new for me. I have a regular group of women that I've been teaching up in Greenwich for many years, like 10 years. And I've seen a lot of big houses. But this house was like the biggest house I have ever experienced. 30,000 square feet. Her walk-in refrigerator was as big as one of my studio apartments in Manhattan. Yeah, she had a walk-in refrigerator. But I'm not bitter. That's not what I'm bitter about. Not bitter about that. Nope, no sir, no bitterness. Because after leaving her palace, I got in my little Subaru and I drove across Connecticut and across Westchester to my tiny bungalow. And I've mentioned the tiny bungalow here on the show before. It's where I have my garden. And my tiny bungalow is 400 square feet. And I love it. And I happily spend my weekends there from April to November. It's the most perfect 400 square feet of space in my life. So I don't need the additional 29,600 square feet. Not me. No, no, no. I'm happy with my little 400. So I drive over there and I get to my little tiny bungalow. And I went down the street to visit my pal Ida, who lives in the same little bungalow community. Now, you may remember Ida because I did a show about thriftiness a while ago and I talked about Ida. Now, Ida is an older woman and she's probably somewhere between 65 and 80, but I don't know because she won't tell me. She refuses to tell me how old she is. But she's a great friend and she's as energetic and lively and sharp and foul-mouthed as any of my 40-something friends, and that's why I love her. And she's like real old school Italian American, Ida. She's great. And she's really into food. And she is who I want to be when I grow up. And she loves bitter too. She is a little, she's not really bitter. She's dark, but she's funny. But she loves bitter too. We both love bitter flavors. And she especially loves broccoli rabe, being Italian. She loves her broccoli rabe. And so I went over to her house and I said, "Let's go for a walk. It's a beautiful afternoon. I have some time." So she said, "Oh, the local AMP had broccoli rabe on sale for 99 cents a pound. Let's go there." So we walked down to AMP so we could get broccoli rabe because Ida also loves a good deal as much as I do. She's thrifty. And so we did. We went down there. We got some. And now broccoli rabe, I think, is a perfect vegetable because it's like it's a value-added vegetable. You get multiple vegetables in one. You get the floret experience of broccoli, plus the leafy green experience of like a Swiss chard or a mustard, plus the stem experience that's not as tough as broccoli stems. It's almost more like, like broccolini or like an asparagus. So it's like a 3-in-1 vegetable experience, plus a massive dose of bitterness tempered by a nice underlying sweetness. So it really is like a total perfect vegetable experience. I love the broccoli rabe. So I got the broccoli rabe and I put it away, and I cooked it. But I can't get to that because we have to take a break right now. So we'll be right back when we come back. What happened to the broccoli rabe? You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So I was talking about this broccoli rabe that I went out and I bought with Ida last Friday. Ida, my buddy, who also has a tiny bungalow. Hers actually isn't as tiny as mine. There's two of us in the tiny one and one of her in the bigger one. Anyway, so we got the broccoli rabe. I went home. I put it in the fridge. And then Saturday morning came around and it was time for breakfast. And I love breakfast, as I'm sure you know, because I talk about it a lot. And I get a chance on the weekends to actually really cook something for breakfast. So Saturday morning, I chopped it up and I put it in a pan with a lot of oil and some local garlic that I had bought. And I cooked it nice and slow. When I saute leafy greens, I cook them pretty fast, but when I saute something a little heartier, like broccoli rabe, I like to cook it nice and slow. I like to let the garlic get nice and caramelized. I like to let the vegetable almost kind of roast in the pan. And also that takes care of some of the bitterness too. So I got that all cooked down and wilted and it's delicious. And then I remembered that I also had a head of radicchio in the fridge too that was left over from my previous trip that week to Greenwich when I taught the first group, and for that group, I have to buy the food. So if there's anything left over, I take it home because it's my money. So I sliced up the radicchio and I put that in too, and that's really good sauteed. It wilts down. I don't like to cook that quite as much. I just like to wilt it, but the radicchio is so good and also, of course, very bitter, which I... Did I mention how much I like bitter? Anyway, so I sliced that up. Then I took the greens out of the pan, and then I had these really good eggs... good local eggs with really dark orange yolks, and I fried those eggs up in the pan in olive oil too. Now, if you've never cooked a fried egg in olive oil, you are missing out. You know, eggs and butter are great, but eggs cooked in olive oil, really, really good. So I made us some nice over easy fried eggs. They were from Knollcrest Farms, those eggs at Union Square, and they really taste rich and eggy and good. And so I slid those eggs over the greens and I made some sourdough toast and we had breakfast. And I have to say, it was pretty damn tasty. Those eggs, the rich yolk kind of like slipped down into those bitter greens and mellowed them out. And we sopped it all up with toast. It was so good. We really should eat more greens for breakfast. Why do vegetables get segregated to the post-midday meal? It's almost like vegetables are treated like alcohol. You can't have them until afternoon. Why is that? I think we should be eating more vegetables, more greens at breakfast, people. I highly recommend it. Let's start a movement. Let's start a greens at breakfast revolution, shall we? So anyway, we had those greens and we're going to do more of that. And so it seemed like the weekend was kind of starting off, you know, with this theme of bitterness. I mean, the week before was Rosh Hashanah, and that's the start of the new year, and that's supposed to be very sweet, right? But then on Yom Kippur, you're supposed to atone for your sins. Now, I don't really believe in all that, but I suppose it does cast a little bit of a pall over the feeling of the weekend. I don't really feel like I have that much to atone for. I don't think I've done anything particularly bad this year. I think I've been pretty good. But nonetheless, bitterness seemed to be the theme of the weekend. So we had those great eggs with the greens and we got on with our day. Now, the day wasn't bitter. It was actually a pretty sweet day. It was beautiful out, took a swim, really nice day. Now, in our little bungalow colony, our little community, there's a building and it's called the Social Hall. And some of the old timers there call it the casino, which I think is hilarious because casino to me conjures up the Bellagio, or you know, when Lucy and Ricky went to Monaco or Monte Carlo. All bling and really thick carpet and faux glamour and smelling like cigarettes. But this place looks more like the dining hall at your summer camp in the Catskills if you went to camp in 1951. That's more what it feels like. But we love it. We love the social hall. And on some weekends in the summer, we have some kind of entertainment for the community there. Movies or music, or sometimes people dance. And we had a wine tasting this summer. And it's usually fun. Usually fun. Sometimes it's really stupid. But it's usually really fun. And anyway, so the season is pretty much over, but there are a lot of us who stick around well into the fall. And one of them is the president of our community. Now, the president of our community, because we run it like a co-op, is a woman named Lisa Gutkin. Now, Lisa Gutkin is a grandchild of one of the original founders of the community. The community was founded by a group of communist and socialist garment workers and furriers in the early 1900s. And Lisa's family was one of the founding families. So she is a direct descendant of the founders, and now she is president of the board. And her house is right across the road from our house, and we're buddies with her. We hang out, we drink. She's cool. Now, Lisa is a violinist, but she is, more importantly, the violinist or fiddler for a band called the Klezmatics, if you've ever heard of them. And she's also a very accomplished Irish fiddler. She's an amazing musician. And she often tours, but when she's around, we hang out with her. And so Lisa said, how about for entertainment this weekend, we show movies that we've all been in, basically. So she said, let's show your episode of Chopped. I was on Chopped last spring. And let's show the documentary that just came out about the Klezmatics. So I said, okay, that sounds fun. I can deal with the humiliation of watching it yet again, this time on a really big screen. It's okay. So now, usually when we have these nights of entertainment, Adam and I, my husband, will make ourselves cocktails to bring along, basically in case it sucks. And, you know, we can at least get a little buzz and it makes it more tolerable. But usually everybody does that. They often serve wine, but it's like gross Australian Chardonnay and I don't want to drink that. So we usually bring our own. Now, back to the bitter theme. I invented a cocktail a few years ago up at the little house one summer and I call it the Buchanan in honor of a town nearby. And the Buchanan is made from equal parts. It's like a gin and tonic, basically, but it's half and half tonic water and club soda. Now, I love tonic water. I love the flavor. I love the bitterness, of course. It's delicious. It's medicinal. It's herby. Tonic water has everything great going for it, except that it's got way too much sugar. It's way too sweet for me. So I cut the tonic in half with club soda. And I love gin, because gin to me tastes like pine trees and cucumbers in a bottle. And I like both of those things a lot. So I do half club soda, half tonic. Then I put in a couple of ounces of gin. And then I add a big splash of Campari. Because Campari, also bitter, delicious. Love it. Tastes like Robitussin. Love that. So you mix all that up and it becomes a Buchanan. And it's this like delicious, refreshing, bittersweet gin, cool, crisp drink, and I put a little squeeze of lime in it. I think last year I did a show on bitterness, bitter flavors, and I mentioned Campari. I talked about it a lot. So you may already know that, but, you know, why not mention it again? Now, I love Campari also. It's like the perfect bitter flavor, but I also love thriftiness, and I do not love spending money if I can help it. So about a month or so ago, we went to our local liquor store up there in the country. And they had some other options beside Campari in the Amaro section. Campari is an Amaro. It means bitter. And they had a few other Amari, to choose from. So there was one called Amaro Chocara. C-I-O-C-A-R-A. Chocara. And it had a really pretty label. So I decided to buy it. It was kind of a Campari knockoff. So Chocara is pretty much a pale imitation of Campari. It's not as strong, it's not as sweet, it's not as red, but it's not too bad. It's actually pretty good. And I have found that the Chocara is really good if you just put a few drops of it into like a club soda on ice or just ice water, and it makes a really nice thirst-quenching beverage for when you don't really want any alcohol. Like if you go out running, then you come back and you have some of that, and it's good. It's very, very low in alcohol anyway. So a few drops, not going to do anything. Now, the flavor It's a reminiscent flavor of Campari. It's not as good, but it is a very good example of getting what you pay for, because it's about half the price of Campari, and you're basically buying about half of the experience of Campari. Anyway, we have to take another quick little break. We'll be right back, and then I'll get back to the evening and why I'm bitter. You're listening to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Weitz. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And if you are a fan of this show, you can find us on Facebook, of course. If you just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network, you can find us there. Leave me a message, become a fan. I would love to hear from you. You can also always podcast any Heritage Radio Network show on iTunes in case you miss them. You never have to listen live, although we like you to, but you can always podcast them. And on the Heritage Radio Network website, you can leave us comments about all of our shows. And if you leave me a comment, I will respond. It may take me a few days, but I respond. So keep them coming. We want to hear from you. Okay, so anyway, back to the evening. So we were going to show my episode of Chopped, and we were going to show Lisa's movie. So I went over to Lisa's to help her bring down some of the cheese. We decided to serve cheese and pears because there's a pear tree growing there on the lawn of this very, very, very old man named Pesach Fishman, who died a couple years ago. And he left behind this pear tree on his lawn, and the new people who bought the house haven't been up there much, so in that big storm we had, one of the big branches of the pear tree got knocked down. So there were all these pears, so Lisa picked the pears. We decided we would serve the pears, and we would serve some cheese. So I went down to help her, anyway, get the cheese, and I got to her house, and she had a little glass in her hand of something that looked very familiar. And I said, "What are you drinking?" And she said, "Oh, I'm drinking an Amaro." I said, "After all these years, I had no idea that you drank Amaros." And so we had a little bonding moment over that. And then we went down the hill to the casino and we fired up the DVD player. So if you did see me when I appeared on Chopped, you will remember that I came in second. A very tight second, but still it was second. It's okay. I'm not bitter. Really, I am not bitter about it. I had a lot of fun being on the show, and that was enough. Really. And anyway, everybody watched in the casino and laughed and had a great time and made lots of funny comments, and we all had a good laugh and it was fun. But every time I watch it, it sets off this like frantic brain race in my head that I can't stop, where I have to reenact every second and every move and every mistake of the show when I'm trying to go to sleep. Okay, I cannot watch it for a few months. And then if I have to watch it with somebody, I am tortured when I'm trying to go to sleep because my brain wants to run back through the whole show. And that's exactly what happened that night. I lay awake in bed until the wee hours, listening to all the little creatures outside scratching around and all the scary noises that you hear at night in the country. My brain was holding me hostage. It was not letting me forget all the mistakes that I made on the show, like leaving the bloodline in the fish. Now, it also could have been that I drank two IPAs and that Campari, but I think not. I think it was that I was watching the show and it still torments me. So I was feeling a little bit bitter about that. But speaking of bitter and of IPAs, that's something that I have not really talked about yet on the show, which is beer, because you have a whole show about beer on the network. But I think IPAs are one of the most brilliant food inventions ever. I love a good IPA so much because they taste just like grapefruit. And grapefruit is one of my favorite flavors ever in the world of all flavors on the planet. Grapefruit is up there like in the top three. And if you have a beer that tastes like grapefruit, what could be better than that? And if you gave me Rogue Brutal Bitter, which is a really good IPA, I would be very unbitter. I'd be very happy. I think that may be the best beer ever. But anyway, then we watched Lisa's film. And Lisa's film, which, well, mostly flattering. This was a documentary that was made about the Klezmatics. This camera crew director followed them around for 4.5 years, documenting them. The Klezmatics have been around for 26 years. And Lisa's been their violinist for, I don't know, 20 of them, maybe. But it was a strange film. It was mostly flattering, but there was definitely this weird agenda that the filmmaker had. And he didn't really present her in the most positive way. I won't really get into it. You'll have to watch it sometime. But suffice it to say, Lisa was feeling pretty bitter about it afterwards. And now, I've never thought of her as a bitter person at all. She's actually one of the biggest optimists I know. She's one of the most optimistic people I've ever met. Maybe now that she's drinking all this Amaro, it's having this effect on her. It's like tainting her from the inside. Can that happen? I mean, if you are what you eat, can you also be what you drink? It's a scary thought. I eat all that broccoli rabe and radicchio, and I drink all that Campari and all those IPAs. I better be careful. Do you think that you can turn yourself bitter from the inside out? I don't know. But then I was thinking about this, and I also eat a lot of honey on a daily basis, so maybe I'm balancing it out. Maybe it's okay. If you eat enough honey at the same time that you eat enough bitter, maybe you just balance it out and you become a regular sort of relatively balanced person. I'm not so sure. Something to think about this week. That's about it for the bitter, the saga and the tale of the bitter. Now, speaking of honey, I just went up on the roof here to check on my bees here at Roberta's, and those bees have done a very good job. They've been very productive. I'm really happy. I didn't think I was going to get that much honey, but not only have they filled out their deep box full of honey, which is for themselves, but now my little shallow honey super up there has a good amount in it too. I almost cried. I was so proud of my little girls. I can practically put another honey shallow on soon and see what I wind up with, and then maybe harvest some honey in a couple weeks. So that to me is profoundly moving and does not make me bitter at all. That actually makes me incredibly happy. So we're just about out of time. I want to remind all our listeners that this weekend at Roberta's, there is a big Heritage Radio Network party, and all your favorite hosts will be there. It is open to the public. I believe tickets are $100 a person, but it's totally worth it because you will get unlimited food and drink and mingling with all of us super celebrity radio hosts. So if you want more information, you should look on the heritageradionetwork.com website and check that out. And hopefully you can come down and join us and we'll have ourselves a good old time. So if I don't see you then, I'll see you next Tuesday night. Thanks for listening and have a good week.